Hello everyone, my name is Stephen Jimenez, and I'd like to welcome you all to our radio documentary series, Teenage Kicks. In this episode, we will discuss the topic of drugs. In part one of this topic, we spoke to the people who deal with the issues of drug abuse on a daily basis. However, we failed to speak to those who deal with the problem firsthand. In this episode of our documentary series, I'm going to find out who helps young people dealing with the issue of substance abuse and if the problem has changed for the better or worse. We first spoke to clinical nurse specialist in adolescent substance abuse, Philip James, one of the only drugs counsellors in Louth for young people. In the scope of things, how bad is the drug problem in Dundalk compared to the rest of the country?
Dundalk and Louth, I mean, it's probably no different than the rest of the country dramatically from an under 18 point of view. The one that presents the most common is cannabis. Cannabis by far, for all adolescent drug treatment services around the country, is the one 100% of clients I see have tried cannabis, and many of them are smoking cannabis every day. So that's the one that they're most frequently using and probably the one that's causing the most significant harm for them.
In relation to what I suppose you could call harder drugs, do you see many young people using them?
Yeah, I mean, certainly a lot of the young people I've met, not all of them, about 50% of the young people I met have used, say, substances like ecstasy, cocaine and illicit kind of tablet use, benzodiazepines as they're commonly known, or Valium, those kind of drugs. So certainly there is those available. I think if kids wanted to use them more, they probably could, but I think that they've probably got a bit of a bad reputation among lots of people. So that's probably why there's less use of them. But there's lots of other drugs there available if you want them.
In regard to availability, are they more widely available in Dundalk than, say, Dublin or any other part of the country?
I'm not sure if they're more available here than they are in Europe, and I'm not sure if they're more available in Dundalk than they are, say, in Drogheda or Mullingar or Limerick or wherever. I think drugs are just available in most countries if people want them. I mean, there is a kind of a perception that Ireland is getting worse from a drug problem point of view. And actually, among our teenagers, there's lots of good news there. And I mean, you can go and look it up, but there's a study that any of your listeners can look up called the ESPAD study. And it's espad.org is the website. It's the European School Project on Alcohol and Other Drugs, which is a study where they study 16 and 17 year olds in school every 4 years. So we've gathered data on 16 year olds in Ireland in 1995 and in every 4 years since. So 99, 2003, 2007, 2011 and most recently 2015. And what we've seen in those figures, which are very robust, and there's 2,500 kids surveyed in Ireland roughly every 4 years, that actually the amount of kids using cannabis in the mid 90s was about twice the rate that there is of kids using cannabis now. So that's not bad news, that's good news. And there's no corresponding kind of, well, it's ecstasy has gone up or cocaine has gone up. Basically, everything has kind of either stayed the same or reduced. Alcohol is reduced as well. So I don't think it's any worse than it is now than it was maybe 20 years ago. There's certainly not any hard facts to really back that up. I think it's probably, I mean, drugs come in out of trends. When there was dance culture in the mid-90s, there was a lot of ecstasy. So different drugs will go out of trends. There was head shops 5 or 6 years ago when they were available. That kind of happens. But there's no dramatic deterioration in the last number of years.
Is there any way of preventing a drug problem in young people?
Yeah, the kind of stuff that kind of prevents people from, I suppose, preventing drug problems, or it seems there's no magic silver bullet. There's nothing that kind of seems to destine people to end up having a drug problem, and there's nothing that kind of seems to dramatically always prevent people from having drug problems. Generally speaking, if people have, I suppose, happy family lives, they generally tend to do better. One of the big problems is that if you've got a kid who's very unhappy at home for whatever reason, if there's family breakup or if there's lots of tension or rows at home, they're going to spend more time out in the street because they're going to avoid being at home. and that puts them then more at risk. If you've got substance use within a family, whether it's a parental substance use or a granny or whatever, that does seem to increase likelihood and kind of the risk of a young person developing substance use. Likewise, what's role modelled? If you've got parents who are, you know, drinking in front of their child or using drugs in front of their child, that child's more likely to go on and want to try and do that as well. So a lot of it is role model from the adults the kid sees. A lot of it is about kind of societal stuff. Generally speaking, poorer neighbourhoods tend to have more problems with drugs and alcohol. So therefore, kids in more difficult neighbourhoods are probably have easier access, I suppose we should say, to drugs than kids maybe in some other areas. But a lot of it is very individualised. There's lots of kids from very rich neighbourhoods and rich backgrounds and private schools who develop significant drug problems too. So there's nothing that will completely reduce it. Being involved in school and being involved in kind of healthy activities like sports or drama or dance or whatever it is somebody's into, music, are generally protective as well. So there's a whole range of protective things. It's not one thing.
Do you think that you have prevented young people from continuing to use illicit substances on a daily basis?
That's the plan. I mean, you know, we have a service in Loudmeath now for young people with drug or alcohol problems. I mean, what all the research would say is that, you know, I'm not naive enough to believe that I'm going to stop every young person in Loud smoking cannabis and that'll never happen. The reality is, you know, just like people get in trouble with alcohol, people will probably continue to get in trouble with cannabis. What we can try and do is reduce that harm. If a young person is smoking 5 days a week, obviously I'd love if he gave up. And that would be much better. But even if he doesn't give up, but let's say he continues to smoke at weekends only. Well, if he's only smoking 2 days a week, that's much better than 7 days a week. It's going to be less harmful to him physically and mentally. It's probably going to reduce the debts that he's running up, and it's going to help him function better. If we can keep someone in school, that reduces the harm to them. So that's effectively what service like mine are trying to do. We can't solve every problem and all that sort of stuff, but what we can do is try and reduce the harms that lots of young people are I suppose, experiencing because of or cannabis or any other drug use for that matter. Prevention isn't my specific area, but I mean, there is the SPHE programs in school. That wasn't there 20 years ago when I was finishing off secondary school. But I mean, the figures are that drug use is actually reducing among teenagers, secondary school students. So that might be an indication it's actually working better. I know a lot of people can be critical of SPHE, but perhaps it is part of the thing that's helping young people to reduce their drug use at the moment. I don't know. The research is kind of fairly specific that there's not a whole lot of education that's really been proven to be very, very helpful to stop young people developing drug or alcohol problems. So there used to be a tendency to kind of schools to go out and kind of get somebody who maybe had a heroin problem to come in and talk to the school. And most 16-year-olds just can't relate to that maybe 30 or 40 year old heroin addict, and that just seems to actually not help at all. So there's a lot of people who want more education, but unfortunately there's not a dramatic amount of research saying that the education is going to be really, really helpful. What seems to be really helpful is keeping kids and young people involved in things that kind of divert them away from drugs or alcohol. So keep them involved in sports, keep them involved in healthy activities, and in supporting happy home lives.
What advice would you give to parents around preventing their son or daughter from falling into drug abuse?
Probably the best advice, a reference I suppose I'll give for parents to go, do if you're listening to this and you want to look at it, Google the 40 developmental assets. The 40 developmental assets are something that's been developed over years, mainly in the United States, but basically it's a list of 40 things that seem to be protective factors against developing drug or alcohol problems, but also against developing mental health problems and stuff like that, or criminality and stuff. So they're overall good things. To put it in perspective, if you've got 30 or more of the 40 developmental assets, if your kid does, you're only, I think, a 3% likelihood of developing an alcohol problem. If you have less than 10 of them, that person has a 48% chance of developing a drug or alcohol problem. So the more of those assets you can give to your kid, the better. And some of them are things like, for example, that they're involved 2 or 3 hours a week in sports, or another 2 or 3 hours a week in arts or something like that. That they kind of see a purpose to school and that they're involved with school. That they have 3 or more non-parent adults who are supportive of them and are kind of help them out. That they read for pleasure 3 hours a week. So they're kind of simple things. So if you've got a kid in primary school, you want to instill in them the love of reading if you can. If you have a kid involved, you know, in primary school, rather than wait until they're 16 and then trying to get them into football, you need to try and do everything you can to keep them involved in the healthy stuff, because a lot of people drift away from them in secondary school, and that increases their likelihood of developing drug or alcohol problem. So it's starting at the young age and kind of putting in place those protective factors. And a lot of them aren't necessarily knowledge or education about drugs. They're just healthy things that sometimes we take for granted.
It's clear that Philip was doing a positive thing, stopping young people from abusing substances on a daily basis. I wanted to find out what was happening locally, so I went into their house in Coxlets in Dundalk to speak to local activist and youth worker Gareth Welton. Gareth has been working in this scene for many years. If there's anyone who knows anything to do with this area, it is him. Gareth, welcome to the show. Why are drugs so widely available in Dundalk, do you think?
I think drugs are so available. Like, I mean, it depends. Like, I mean, benzos are so available in Dundalk because they're so cheap. They're easily transported. There's massive profits on them. And they're physically addictive, so therefore they create a lucrative market. So the reason I know benzos are so popular in Dundalk is because you see the evidence on the street with the little wee silver packets flashing up at you on the street. If you know what you're saying, that says Xanax on the side of them, which is the trade name. But benzodrine is I think the chemical name of the drugs, which seriously impacts on the psychological health of a person and the physical health.
And Gareth, another question I suppose that you take from that, because you're speaking so much about benzodiazepines and legal highs as they're also known, do you think that these substances are more likely to become more popular than the classic illicit substances such as cannabis and cocaine?
I think there's all trends. There's trends with drug usage and drug popularity, you know. Like, I suppose in my lifetime, hash, cider, ecstasy, acid, benzos, speed were all accessible on the streets of Dundalk at any one time. Heroin has its own market as well, do you know what I mean? So these are all drugs that are readily available. Some of them are more popular than others, do you know what I mean? So grass and cocaine are expensive, so therefore people have to be very creative in how to get the money for them drugs. MDMA / ecstasy seems to be making a bit of a comeback. It's been talked about a bit more, do you know what I mean? But primarily the drugs that I would see young people using would be grass and benzos and alcohol.
Gareth, you just mentioned alcohol abuse there. Why do you think it's such a major problem at the moment? And what's the link between alcohol abuse and the abuse of these benzodiazepines or legal highs?
It sounds like I'm pontificating, you know what I mean? I've grown up in Dundalk, and when we were growing up, it was the bottles of cider out in the street and having the crack with our peerage, you know, our group, and having the sing-song and having the crack, you know? And thankfully, a lot of us didn't come to much harm there, do you know what I mean? But I've seen, you know, different generations come and go, and actually there's been very tragic effects with the mix of alcohol and especially benzos. You know, I've known a couple of families who've suffered tragedies through accidental overdose, do you know what I mean? Because the two of them are depressants and suppressants on the central nervous system. So what they do is they actually force the body to stop functioning, the heart slows down, and people can go into just heart failure because the impact of both drugs on the body, you know. So, and I think, you know, both drugs are kind of seen, you know, the benzos are seen as clean, pharmaceutical grade, they come out of a packet, you know what I mean, and alcohol, sure, it's socially acceptable, everybody does it, you know what I mean. Then when you mix the two together, you know, it's very worrying what can happen to young people, especially because they're only developing physiologically, like their body's only developing. And I believe that the effect on benzos like Xanax and Valium and drugs like that and the D10s, and they're in an adult, they're meant to calm the body down, but because of the changes that are going on in a teenage body, they can actually have the opposite effects. They can have like a speedy up, like an amphetamine effect, and, you know, leaving people agitated.
And Gareth, I know you do a bit of work in this area of education around substance abuse. Could you just tell us a bit about what it is you do?
Half my post is working with North Dundalk Family Support Hub, and I would have what part of that role is to within community education. So there's like last year, I would have been involved with Kieran Marley, who's involved in Tusla, and we would have went around to different communities and talked about the actual physiological and psychological effects of benzo usage. Do you know what I mean? And what to look out for? Do you know? So, in short, yes, it has been very prevalent in North Dundalk, benzo usage, underage benzo usage, and overage, you know, but definitely we would have went around different communities with Care and Fair Play, who's employed as a drugs outreach and councillor with Tusla, and we would have done that so to inform families of the dangers, especially parents, and what to look out for. And let them know what resources are or lack of resources that are around to deal with drug misuse in the county.
And Gareth, what do you think should be done to, I suppose, try and help prevent the problem from being such a big one? I know prevent completely is probably an impossible task in its own right, but what do you think should be done to tackle the issue of substance abuse?
Well, I think we need to fund the whole area of mental health and treat it very much as health, and to be pro as well as anti. So to look at what benefits positive mental health, you know what I mean, and what creates positive mental health. Off the cuff, physical activity, good diet, good company, an open and transparent society where people can talk to one another. That aids mental health, and good social gatherings where people can talk and be human with one another. The other side of that is we need to fund areas where people are caught in the bad way. Society can be very aggressive. It can be very unforgiving. There is a lot of substances that are around at the minute. And I think especially teenagers growing up, well, they haven't learned the art of balance yet. Do you know what I mean? We need resources where outreach workers can go into communities, can talk to people and advocate on what is positive mental health. Let's face it, if people are going to take drugs, to take them properly, if they're going to take them. And that meaning, you know, how much is enough? You know what I mean? What happens if somebody goes into a benzo seizure? What can you do if somebody's frothing at the mouth? The importance of never leaving somebody on their own. The importance of ringing emergency service as soon as possible so people get treated so that they don't go into a benzo stroke. That just shows where this kind of work is in the pecking order. But I actually think it's very important. Clubs and youth clubs should have wellbeing officers who would be kind of first in a wee bit of this, you know what I mean, and the benefits of knowing a bit, maybe prevent people from going into drug usage. People want to do this to get away from what's bad, or drug usage is about being somewhere else other than where you want to be, so it's escapism, you know. The socially acceptable drug in Ireland is alcohol. Bare section of society want to get out of their heads at the weekend, whether it be in alcohol or drugs, you know what I mean? I think we need to be mature about that. I think we need to look at the whole war on drugs and who that's suiting and all that kind of stuff. So I think we need to be mature around drug usage. You know, I think this might sound a bit mad because we're talking about going to the negative impact on drugs on A, family, A, the person, B, the family and C, the community. But if we actually had a big white building out in the outskirts of the town and had an informed lecture every time you purchase a drug, any drug, you're given a mandatory lecture around what it does to the body, and you're also told here's alternatives to taking this drug. You know what I mean? That if you're looking to calm down, if you're looking to slow down, well then look at the whole mindfulness techniques, or look at yoga, stuff like that. If you're looking to get hyper, you know what I mean, well then jump off a cliff into a pool of water. Like, I mean, that'll put you hyper there for about a half an hour, do you know what I mean? Or challenging yourself, or challenging your body, or, you know, doing 5Ks or circuit training or stuff like that creates positive natural endorphins in the body that make you feel well. That is a more natural high, do you know what I mean? But foolish to think that all people are never going to take drugs. Drugs are part of modern society and are here to stay, so we need to get mature about it. In Portugal, I forget the date, so I'm not really great at statistics, but the Portuguese experience is that they decriminalised all drugs, and the rate of addiction and drug usage actually went down. They punish people, there's 3 counts and you're out, so if you're caught playing drugs on the 3rd count, there's a serious prison sentence. So it's not, as people say, a soft approach, it's actually a very mature approach to drug usage in society. So I think we need to look at models like that, which is very much in the media at the minute. We need to look at the medical or the curing qualities of, say, medical marijuana, do you know what I mean? So, and let's be mature about that. It does help certain people with certain ailments, do you know what I mean? As I'd know and be involved in the campaign around making it medicine, which is basically, it's on the back of Fiara Toomey, who's a very passionate mother in Cork, who's trying to fight for her daughter Ava, who's got Dravet syndrome, which is a very aggressive form of epilepsy. And actually, medical marijuana prevents Ava from having multiple seizures, and any one of them seizures could have her killed. I just think the whole drugs issue needs to be mature. We need a mature approach to it. And we do need to deal with it again in a very punitive manner. So let's have open discussions. Let's be transparent about it. Let's be real about it. Don't bury it under the carpet. don't make it alluring by making it illegal. It's something that, you know, it's clandestine and therefore there's a bit of a risk, which is an added factor to doing it. And the whole ritual of buying drugs is another thing, you know, pattern forming and all that. Get it out in the open, make it boring, and then will it be that popular? Let's face it, like, I'm not making light of this, Stephen, either. I've experienced in my professional work too many fatalities through drug misusage, so I do think we need to be mature about it. And I do think there are solutions out there if we all combine and share our resources and fund it. This whole area of mental health and addiction is seriously underfunded. People are not important. As far as I see, and I'm not being cynical, human wastage is seen as collateral.
It was clear from my interview with Gareth that he was very passionate around the topic of substance abuse. I would hope that one day his recommendations may see government approval. In part one of this episode, we spoke to Loud TD and President of Sinn Féin, Gerry Adams. Throughout that interview, we discussed the topic of the Ardalgan complex on Quay Street, which is currently vacated due to a lack of fire safety regulations which had not been set in place when the building had been firstly developed. Following this interview, I was recommended to speak to Sinn Féin councillor Jennifer Green. Unfortunately, Jennifer Green has stepped down as a county councillor. However, former journalist for the Argus, Anne Campbell, has taken her role and is also very passionate about this topic. I spoke to her about the Ardalgan complex. Anne, welcome to the show. A major reason why you're here is to discuss the ongoing topic of the Ardalgan complex on Quay Street. It's such a major problem.
It really is, Stephen. It's a carbuncle on the face of Dundalk, really. Look, it's in the process of getting sorted, according to the council, but the progress is far too slow. As you know, the apartment block was granted planning permission and built, but it was never occupied because they couldn't stand over a fire safety certificate. It was so dangerous that people couldn't live in it. So it was let rot away, and it has attracted a huge amount of antisocial behaviour, including drug taking, drug dealing. And the other major problem with it is that only about 10 days ago, we've had the latest in the series of numerous fires at the apartment complex. The people of the Quay area where Ardalgan is located are absolutely frustrated and upset at the lack of progress on the rejuvenation of Ardalgan. Current situation, my understanding of it is that the apartment complex has been acquired by a Chinese consortium. And at the moment, we were told at the municipal district meeting in Dundalk on the 3rd of October, so just about 3 weeks ago, the current situation with the council is that there is a feasibility study being carried out and that the problem is continuing to be sorted out. It is hoped that in the end, a housing association like TUA will take over the building, and it's expected it will be a mix of 1 and 2 bedroom apartments. And that all sounds really good theoretically, and I think the people of Quay Street would be happy to see families from the housing list looked after at Ardalgan. But the problem is that it's taken far too long, and I raised it at the municipal district meeting on the 3rd of October. The response from the council was that work is continuing and it is at a very sensitive stage, and that no further updates would be given about the status of Ardalgan or the process until it was complete. They said because of commercial sensitivity around it, and I think it's a bit of a cop-out by the council. They can use the phrase commercial sensitivity as a cover-all blanket. Nobody knows really what's going on, but we have another council meeting next week, and Ardalgan will be on the agenda again as part of a report into the updates on how infrastructure projects are going. And I will keep asking the same questions about it, because I think the people of Quay Street and Dundalk in general are entitled to know how close are we to getting this finished and what's going to happen to it when the process is complete.
And Dan, as well as the antisocial behaviour in the Ardalgan complex of drug abuse and other instances, there has been a video which went viral of two youths within the Ardalgan complex filming their way around it and gaining entry into the complex, which is in no way safe. Why is this possible?
Yes, I mean, that is a very good question, Stephen, and I think the answer to it is the fact that this is the other problem with Ardalgan, and I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's betwixt and between now. The council don't own it. this Chinese consortium own it, but they're in the middle of trying to get it sorted out with TUA. So you have a number of different agencies involved and nobody's taking responsibility for it. So as you said, last March people were able to go in and film it. Nobody is securing the premises properly. Nobody is patrolling the area properly, although the consortium have apparently told the council that they do have security guards there. But it's not enough. And people are able to go in and out at will, and that's the problem. If it was just people filming inside it, that's one thing. But that wouldn't really be a major problem. The major problem is coming from the drug taking and the antisocial behaviour around it.
From speaking to Anne, it was clear that she was very passionate around the topic of Ardalgan. Just in the last couple of days following the interview, it has been confirmed that the housing units Anne had talked about will be developed very soon. It is great news for the residents of Quay Street that the horror of antisocial behaviour and arson will soon end. Following this, we spoke to local councillor John McGahan to find out if he thought Dundalk/Louth had a drug problem and, in his opinion, what he thought should be done. John, does Dundalk/Louth have a drug problem?
Yeah, very much so. I'm not saying that Dundalk or Louth have higher drug problems than anywhere else. I think it's endemic across the whole country. I think Dundalk has the same level of drug problems as Clonmel or Cork or Kerry. Or, you know, it's a widespread issue in our society. Like, I see it in my work as a county councillor, particularly in some areas where it's so accessible to get drugs, any type of drugs, for 12-year-olds upwards. It's the type of thing is if you're in a housing estate or somewhere else and you have one fella has five or six of these, I think poppers or something, I think is one of the words that's come up to me. You know, has them in his pocket and he's sharing them out like sweets. Like, if you saw there recently the news, the guards in the dock swooped in on such and something like 25 known drug dealers. The 25 were small-time guys. Do you know what I mean? They were just the guys on the street who was supplying it. Like, it wasn't, they weren't the main players as such. And, you know, when you see that you've that level of drug dealers being lifted in one day, known people, then it certainly does suggest that Dundalk and County Louth have a drug problem.
Do you have any suggestions about how these problems could be tackled?
I think supervised injection facilities is actually a way forward. And you see in the Oireachtas at the moment, Senator Aidan O'Riordan has been a strong champion for this. And in the last government, when he indeed was a junior minister for, and drugs fell under his remit. And Catherine Byrne, who's the Fine Gael minister now, is very supportive of the idea. And what I mean by that is, if you have a supervised clinic as such for drug users who are drug addicts to go in and they can safely take whatever drugs they would be taking anyway on the street under the supervision of a medical profession, I think that is a much safer environment and a safer scenario rather than having them outside shooting up on the side of the road or down a laneway and then they're leaving whatever type of drug paraphernalia around, which is then a danger to
children
and anyone else. Yeah, exactly. So in terms of what I would propose, I'd love to see something like that, supervised injection facilities across the country. It's obviously going to result in NIMBYism where people say, not in my backyard, oh geez, I don't want drug dealers coming down my street, blah blah blah. People who suffer from drug addiction aren't monsters, you know, they're humans. And
it's
same,
not their fault, it's just once they're on it, that's it.
Exactly, the same as me and you, they've just had a tougher hand dealt to them in life and we should be there to offer them a helping hand up, and I think supervised injection facilities is the way forward with that.
From speaking to John, it was clear he was also very passionate around the topic of substance abuse. Over the last two episodes, all of our contributors have spoken about the harsh reality surrounding drugs for both the people who use them and the people standing by in society. At present, it's clear that drugs are still a major problem, both locally and nationally. In my opinion, I believe local councillors, youth groups, An Garda Síochána, and other organisations should work together in an effort to rid our streets from these substances and the sale, supply, and antisocial behaviour that goes with it. Signing off here today, I'd like to thank all of our contributors between the two episodes, the young people who have helped make this production possible, and you at home for listening. We will revisit this topic in the very near future, that the issue itself will have improved.
When she's mine, she looks so good. I wanna hold her tight.